Well, if a hot dog makes you lose control, you're tuned to the right station, WBAI New York, where it's time now for Gene Shepherd. And today's episode is approximately from November 17th of 1969. It's from Boston syndication, which means that about a week or two after it was broadcast in New York, it was had the commercials and IDs trimmed and sent off in syndication. This was recorded in Boston. November 1969, it's called the French 75. Enjoy, and mix yourself up one while you listen.
I can do for you, huh? I mean, is there any reason why you're here? Or have you asked that question recently? Would you please, you will, just back it off there a little bit there. We don't want to disturb those nice people out there, those serious, deeply concerned human individuals, so steeped, so rich in soul. Oh, by the way, how is your soul tonight, friends? Probably bugs you to realize that a lot of people figure you ain't got none. I mean, that's total arrogance. You know, for one guy to say, I got soul, and you ain't got soul. I mean, really, that's total arrogance. Oh, yes, indeed. Well, now, would you please raise your baton there, doctor? There we go. You know, I hate to tell you this, but you know that I have a friend who faked his way through neurosurgery school. Yeah. Faked his exams a whole bit. And now he's a very highly... I want to add fuel to the fire. Listen, don't laugh, Mac. If the truth were out about how you're faking your life, I mean, you're in no position to throw no rocks, if I may use a Jersey expression. Hey, you slob. How would you like to hear a hit record from... Now, we don't play records. I mean, this is not a record show, so don't make any false or rash assumptions. I mean, that's why you're in so much trouble in your life anyway. You make too damn many false and rash assumptions. But how would you like... One of our spies, he is out the Far East, and he will not say why he's out there, although he did imply heavily that certain things happened in northern New Jersey that made his departure for the Far East not only necessary, but a relief. And they're still after him. But it has, one of these ridiculous domestic problems. By the way, speaking of domestic problems, I would like to salute some of our more swinging celebrities here. A little note from London, in case you missed this, social note from all over. Actress Mia Farrow, who was once Mrs. Frank Sinatra, and Andre Previn, chief conductor of the London Symphony Orchestra, are expecting a baby next spring. And I think that's kind of nice. I like to see, folks get together like that. A Previn spokesman said the musician authorized the announcement, but would have nothing to say about marriage plans. So, we'd like to salute the nice young couple out there. And, I like people getting together like that. It says that Mr. Previn's wife is in seclusion. And, nothing wrong with that. Nothing. It's just social notes from all over. Now, speaking of social notes, I just, we just got to keep up with things as they go on. And we've received this letter from our spy out there, and he's in Hong Kong. At least he was in Hong Kong briefly. He says he's on his way to some place that's not on the map yet. He says, I hope I get there before they get there to intercept me when I arrive. And I don't know what he was up to. I can't see that a guy could get that much action in New Brunswick, New Jersey, that they would pursue him all the way to the outskirts of Hong Kong. But he said there's a fantastic hit record that is now just absolutely sweeping Hong Kong. And he said, I thought you'd enjoy a copy of it. And so we would like to play just a part of this is true. It's a current hit record in Hong Kong. Now, this is Hong Kong, Hong Kong. This is not Hong Kong, Virginia, which I've been in several times. And they have a hell of a pizza joint there, in case you're interested, if you ever visit Hong Kong. Virginia's great. It's Chinese pizza. But nevertheless, I would like to play the first portion of the big hit record. It is now sweeping the Crown Colony of Hong Kong. I love to say that. The Crown Colony of Hong Kong. And by the way, I hope that kid that, remember a few weeks ago, Nixon wrote to this kid about, you know, his plans in Vietnam and all that. This guy was going to university somewhere. And it turns out Nixon picked the only monarchist registered at that... Did you know that kid was a monarchist? Didn't you realize that? We'd like to salute that slob out there. This is Augustus Rhetoric III, kid. And you stick with it, and we'll bring back that court bacchanal, which is going to be celebrated the 12th of June every year in full costume, bacchanal costume. So, would you please get ready to listen to now the number one hit record on Lady All Hong Kong. Come on. That's it. It's got a hit right there. Now let's start from the top now. Start from the top. No. Start from the top now. I'm going to give you a lesson on how to hit quick cues. Now watch carefully. Here we go. Machine is ready. Here's where they announce it. And now, number 12 is going all the way up to number 3 on the card hit parade in Hong Kong. Here it comes. You've been asking for it. This is a cousin Brucey, of course, of the Far East. He just sold the local product. Well, the same thing that Cousin Bruce sells. Look at that. Oh, what a groovy disc, was it? Oh, listen to that guy hit that tambourine, man. No, I dig it. Oh, play that thing. When you hear this vocalist, this chick vocalist, I guess it's a chick. And so tonight, Ed Sullivan concludes his saluto mysterious and scrutable east. Some of these lyrics are just too racy for the air. We'll have to take that off, Chris. So, you know, Chinese... I dug that. You want to hear the other side? The B side, they're very disappointed in this side. You know, they had a lot of hopes for it. And, the B side, they had a tremendous amount of hopes for it. You know, like many hopes that man has, it just was all blasted to smithereens when the A side made it all the way. You want to hear the B side? Well, you can see why this one didn't make it. It's not quite as well realized. Come pretty easy now.
For God's sake, will you guys quit moving them garbage cans around? I thought Lindsay took care of that damn sanitation department, Myrtle.
I kind of like that, don't you?
Very nice. For people who watch television just for the fun of it. Bum, ba-dum, bum. Sounds uproarious.
Now, I'm sorry. I'm you know, so bad. I'm just such a bad person. Oh, speaking of bad people, we have a note from Sayreville, New Jersey here. It appeared in one of the papers over there. And unfortunately, I don't know which one it was. But I'll find it. I lost it. I always do. But here's a little note from a paper over there in Sayreville, New Jersey. And I think you ought to know about it. It's they know where it is in Jersey. I'll tell you this. No, they're not put off by any of this fate, you know, this business of the panty waste. By the way, isn't that a great phrase? I don't use it. I don't use that one. Incidentally, speaking of great phrases, I heard it today for the first time in a long time. I'm sitting there. You know, I'm being very calm in my office there, and I'm surrounded by all this crud and my little statues of Frankenstein and everything all around me. All of a sudden, I hear one of our top performers here at this concerned station suddenly say a thing which I have not heard since I was 8 years old. He says, "Don't make me laugh. I got cracked lips." He said on the phone to somebody. You know, the instant I heard that, the hackles on the back of my neck went up like, you know, like hackles do. And they were hackling all over the place because there is a phrase. If you ever known somebody, in fact, we have all known people like this, probably maybe you're even one. People who have one thing that somewhere along the line, they got the mistaken idea that it was funny. And they have stuck with it all their life. They keep saying it all the time. Listen, if that elevator starter downstairs once more says to me, once more, he fills in the blanks. It depends on the season. He says, hot enough for you? Or cold enough for you? Oh, I know exactly where I'm going to kick him. And it ain't where you think, friend. I got a better place. I'm just, you know, just debating it. Now, the first 3 years he said it to me, I went through, yes, three, I went through the motions of, I would go every time. I would say, well, yeah, hi, George. And he has this peculiar frozen grin of a guy who's been telling the same joke now since he was nine. He must have heard that joke once. You see, he's about 86 years old. Yes, well, I don't know what his name is. He must have heard that joke when he was, he was about 9 years old, see. He heard some guy who was a Civil War veteran come out and look around and say to his Aunt Fid, say, hey, is it hot enough for you? And he fell over. That's a real, knee slapper, see? It's a sock dollager. And so he remembers this, and he's been saying it ever since. Ooh! And if I hear Nixon once more say, I want to make this perfectly clear. How many times have you heard him say that? And, oh, wow. And, hot enough for you, gang? Cold enough for you? Uh-huh. 8,422 people came up to me when the Mets won the pennant here, and they said, well, the Mets, they won the pennant. It's Mets? Mets, what pennant are you talking about? What do you mean, Mets? For the Mets, the ball team, the Mets. Well, are you talking about the Dodgers? No, the Mets. See, what you do is pretend like you never heard of the Mets. That really confuses them. That's where you been all year? What do you mean? I've been here all along. Mets. Or when the guy comes up to you and says, is it hot enough for you? You say, what hot? Is it hot out? That completely takes the wind out. You know what, hot? Or a cold? What is that? Is it cold out? All of a sudden, he'll deflate like a balloon. You know, like one of these elephants with the pink bodies and the yellow legs that they sell on the street. He just, and the wind goes out. So, well, it's hot out. Let's start from the top again. Is it hot enough for you? You say, hop, hop, hop. Oh, time and again, man faces his reality. He can't help it. And I would like to salute tonight. I would like to salute a couple in Sayreville, New Jersey. An Edison couple staged a sit-down. I've been in Edison, and boy, you know, that's bad enough. And, sure, you know who Edison is named after? Edison, New Jersey? No. Clarence Sampson Edison, who once had the Chevy agency in Edison, New Jersey. And we'd like to salute Clarence out there, yeah? You know what he did, of course? He sold the Chevrolet agency in 1931 to buy the Willys Durant agency. That's right. Poor Clarence, and that's the way Edison, New Jersey's been going ever since. We would like to salute an Edison couple who staged a sit-down yesterday within a car that they are buying from a car dealer on Route 9. I'll tell you what kind of a car it is. It doesn't matter. By the way, friends, have you ever tried to compare what happens to you to the way the same thing is described in a TV commercial? Have you? I was in an airplane the other day, and I want to tell you this. I won't tell you what airline it was. I was in this big air transport plane, tremendous DC-9, or a DC-8 stretched, or maybe it was a 707. Tremendous airplane, see? And we are flying to Los Angeles. Now, that's supposed to be a glamour flight, from New York to L.A. So I get on, and there's about nine of us sitting in there, disconsolate-looking people. Up we go. and we're up in the air about 5 minutes when the stewardess comes back, and she says to me, she says, "You want anything to eat?" I said, "Yeah, that's exactly what happened." She said, "You want anything to eat?" I said, "Well, you know, since I got up at the crack of dawn, I haven't had anything to eat since 3 weeks ago Wednesday. It might help, you know." She said, "All right." I said, "I don't know why." And she goes back to the kitchen they have there, see, and she comes back out again, and she's got nothing with her now. She comes back, and she's sure? And I said, "Yes." I said, "What's the matter, anyway?" She said, "Ah, the food's bad." That's exactly what happened. And I said, "Well, it doesn't matter, you know. I'm up in the air. I'm beggars cannot be choosers at this point, and I can't get down to the White Castle from here, where the food really is groovy, you know, and I can't get down to Medic, so let's see what you can break out." And she says, "Well, what do you want? Do you want the Salisbury steak? Or do you want..." No, this is what she said. "Do you want the Salisbury steak, or do you want the steak? You know, the special Whoopie Mobile Airline steak." And I said, "Well, how's the steak?" And she goes... She nods her head. And I says, "You mean?" She says, "Yeah." I said, "What did he make about it?" She says, "God only knows." And so I said, "You mean you're advising me to take the Salisbury steak? What you're saying is hamburger, right?" She says, "Yeah, that's it." So she goes back. The next thing I know, I've got this little cardboard plate, you know, in front of me. You know, these little cardboard things there. Oh, yeah. That's what they are, really. All right, so they're plastic. So I get this little plastic thing. See, I'm sitting there in front of it. The little tiny hamburger, you see, with the grease running all over the top of it. And this little hard roll. It's the kind of food they serve in the Trenton State Prison. See, it's got a little hard roll, a little hamburger, and there's a little cup of custard, you know, the kind they make out of the, you know, the mix that comes in before custard there, see. And that little pat of butter, which is melted. And I thought the finishing touch was so groovy, there was just one little touch of cigarette ash on my butter when it came, see. So... So I'm sitting there, see, high over Olathe, Kansas, and I'm looking at this meal. And the guy behind me, I heard this guy, there was one guy sitting right behind me, see, and we had all these seats all to ourselves. So he's sitting behind me, then I hear this muttering, see, and he leans over the seat, and he says to me, he says, "Hey, you going to have a drink?" I said, "What?" I hadn't talked to him up to this point, see, and he had this big, round, bulbous red nose, and he had these watery eyes. You know the kind of guy, big, kind of watery eyes, kind of pink skin. And he said, "You know, I'm a drink." I said, there was no class on this. First class was eighth class on this plane. It doesn't make any difference because, you know, they're feeding the same up in front. You know, according to the new rules, oh, yes, they get the same jazz up in the front. The only thing is, instead of getting a plastic cup, they get one of these wax paper cups. The only difference between first and class now is you got to pay for your drink in the front, in the back, and then you got to drink free in the front, see. So he says to me, "Sure, I fly over there, that's true." So he says to me, you're gonna have a drink?" I said, right now, after all, it's only 8:30, I haven't thought about it yet. And, fella, I'd like to ask, but if you're not going to have a drink, how about buying two drinks, and then I'll give you the money, and then you can hand them back to me." I said, "What?" "Well, you know, she said I ought to have I had two drinks already, you know. And you can only get two. What kind of a cockamamie are they? Won't give me a guy a drink?" And I said, "You mean they won't give me another drink?" She says, "Oh, you're going to give me two." I said, "Oh, I see. You want my two drinks. Is that what it is? And you want me to buy them for the girl, and then I hand them back to you." And she, if you're not going to have a drink, I really appreciate it, you know. I ain't had a drink since 5 minutes after eight. And now it's 20 after already." I said, "Well, okay, I'll think about it. What do you like?" "It didn't make no difference. It's anything. We didn't have no green alcohol or nothing here. How about a martini?" I said, "Martini? At 10 after 8? Gee. He's a serious one, see?" And so the girl comes back, and she is bringing me this little thing. She's got this thing where they have the instant coffee, you know, that's made right aboard. It's made aboard the plane. Instant coffee. There's nothing. Listen, I know instant coffee when I taste it. Instant coffee has no relationship to real coffee. No, I'm sorry. I'm not putting it down. I'm simply saying it should be called something else. I mean, it's not coffee. Well, it's one of, you know, so she brings me the instant coffee. See, and I said, well, excuse me, baby. By this time, we were on that. And incidentally, have you noticed this this one airline where this guy keeps saying, Cooper, Gladys G. Cooper, and they're putting the pillows behind us? Well, in our plane, our two stewardesses sat in the back there and argued all the way to California, see, about some guy. You know, there was a whole big thing about one of them wasn't paying the rent, the other one didn't wash her underwear out and was leaving it in the sink, and I don't know, they were roommates or something all the way. And not once did Gladys G. come out and say, can I brush your teeth for you, sir? Or, you know, just a little more, a little heavy on the mushroom sauce. You know what I mean? You know that commercial. I do them well, don't I? A little heavy on the mushroom sauce, Gladys G. You know what I mean? And he goes, boop, he disappears. Well, I don't know. If I tried that with this chick, you know, if they put mushroom sauce on that cardboard piece of Salisbury steak, it just would have been, you know, mushroom sauce on the cardboard steak. So I'm sitting there toying with it. Now, why in the world I had Salisbury steak at 17 minutes past 8, I don't know. I don't know. I guess they were already on California time, see. We were in New York already, you know, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon or something in California. So it's lunchtime. So I'm sitting there playing with the steak. And I said, Gladys G.? She says, yes. I said, Gladys, how about a couple of martinis for me? And she looked at me with that funny look. She says, you don't look like the kind. I said, what do you mean? Are you implying that I don't look like I'm rotten enough to be an alcoholic? Is that what you're saying? Are you trying to say that I look straight? Are you trying to tell me that I look like a Metropolitan Insurance man? Are you trying to tell me that I look like I don't know what, you know, that I drink Diet Yoo-Hoo? No, she said, you know, he's been trying to get everybody on the plane to buy him a drink. I said, oh, you mean? She said, yeah, your friend back there. She says, look, he's laying on the floor now with his feet sticking out in the aisle. I said, well, he's been successful, hasn't he? She says, well, no, not really. She says, you see that briefcase laying there beside him? I said, yeah. She says, well, you see that strap sticking out of the side of it? And I said, yeah. She said, it ain't a strap, that's a straw. I said, so our little band of happy malcontents boomed on out over North Dakota, on and on and on and on. The chicks sitting in the back arguing about their boyfriend and how come you didn't empty the sink the other day when you wash your underwear in it, and on and on. And I thought, man, and then later on, one of the girls came back and sat down, you know, and I started to talk to her. And I said to her, I said, gee, you know, It just isn't like on this plane. It just isn't like the way they have the commercials. You know how the commercials say, get up, up and away? And the commercials always say, just once in a lifetime, get away and get in the world. Just say, oh, have you seen one of these commercials for one of the airlines? It literally advises you to sell your car, put your house in hock, and take a trip on an airline. In other words, say, eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow Cicero, Nero is showing up and he's going to fiddle while Rome burns. And you might as well buy the fiddle strings for him. You know, what the hell? Buy him a little rosin. And there's a strange air that's running through almost all the commercials today. A total decadent. a total hedonism. Which is, you know, a good word for that. It's a total hedonism, which is not only related to enjoying all the bodily functions to the full, but it's also saying there ain't no tomorrow, is what really the commercials say. You know, there ain't no tomorrow. Yeah, it was great. You know? Have you ever had a Nitol Sling? Any of you ever tasted, had a Nitol Sling? Yeah, two Nitol tablets, a little cognac, and just a touch of Grand Marnier. And pour it over ice, and it is a boomer, I want to tell you. Under the counter, just like that, zap. By the way, if you people are interested, as long as we're going to talk about booze here for a while, and that's something that never is discussed much, really. Have you noticed that in all the commercials for booze, or for, you know, liquor, let's put it that way, for a hard drink, they never imply that it does anything other than promote good fellowship or, you know, kind of a warm... Oh, no, they never say... They never say, yeah, they never show a guy, you know, with his toupee on sideways, leaning up against the building with his socks falling down. But nevertheless, I want to tell you, the absolute. Now, I've heard a lot of rumors about drinks, you know. There's always a drink that's rumored to be the most powerful drink there is. And I've never found them to be that way. I mean, they talk about, stuff like the zombie. And to me, a zombie tastes like fermented fruit juice with ice in it. Doesn't do much. And they always say, yeah, one to a customer. Well, that's probably all a customer would ever want. I mean, it's a real bad-tasting drink. And so, I've tasted a lot of these drinks. And, I've never seen anything particularly powerful about it. But let me tell you one thing. I know one drink that is the absolute, and I'll guarantee it, because I saw it almost completely devastate a group of six people who are normally, solid, reliable citizens. This one drink, it was like a disaster area. It was unbelievable. I saw people just, they just fell over backwards, screaming. I'm telling you the truth. I am not. What is it? All right, I'll tell you what it is. And it is one of the, strangely enough, one of the best tasting drinks around. It does not taste like a strong drink. In fact, that's why, I guess maybe one of the reasons why you get mousetrapped by it. But it tastes like a great drink, and it is. Except for one thing. You drink a little bit of this, just drink along there. You know, everybody's talking away there, and you drink. At the somewhat, you begin to have the suspicion that you have just experienced the first tremors of an approaching earthquake. And doggone well, they don't have many earthquakes on 8th Avenue, and all of a sudden you feel the ground rocking a little bit, and you ignore it, because, here's this nice drink you drink along there. And somebody says, hey, Fred, you want it on the phone? And you're trying to get up. I saw one guy, seriously, trying to get up after one of these drinks. He tried to get up. He stood up, and he was a distinguished man. He stood up, and suddenly, he just, without even, his knees didn't even bend. He just fell over, like somebody had cut down the old pine tree. He just fell just fell over, and with a total lack of expression on his face. Just clunk. Now, you want to know what that drink is? Well, I'll give you some clues. To begin with, it is not Diet Pepsi. I'll give you that clue. And it is not made with gin. In fact, it is made primarily, I guess it must be the combination of elements that make this thing so powerful. There must be something in it. Because taken individually, the elements in this drink are not necessarily that powerful. What is it? A French 75. Now, have you ever heard of that? Most of you have not. Well, now I'm going to tell you the history of the French 75, because it's a fascinating history. The French 75 was named the French 75 during World War I, and it became famous as the drink that returning pilots from, and it was an Air Corps, or a fighter pilot drink, actually. And they named it this, that the fighter pilots of World War I, the Allied fighter pilots, and in particularly the Lafayette Escadrille, which was composed of American pilots, and also there were some French pilots in it. They were a whole fascinating, colorful crowd. But when they would come back from the patrol that they had been on, and let's say a couple of guys were shot down and were killed, they were gone, you see. They would come back from the patrol, and they would do two things. They would celebrate their return, safe return, and also toast their fallen comrades with the French 75, which was invented by one man. And incidentally, one of the most famous of all, the Allied aces, invented this drink. I'll award you a brass figure if you can tell me the name of the ace. That drink persists today. You know, it's very rare that a drink or any kind of a dish, let's say mashed potatoes, we'll say, or let's say sweet and sour red cabbage, can be traced to one person. Actually, historically, traced to one guy who invented it. No, it was not Rene Funk. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you who it was. It was Raoul Lufbery. Good morning, Connie. It was Raoul Lufbery, who was he's a famous flyer. As a matter of fact, he's known for two things. Not only did Lufbery invent this drink, he was also a great ace, but Lufbery also invented a maneuver, a flight maneuver, that bears his name, the famous Lufbery turn, which is still part and parcel of the aerobatics. In other words, when an airplane is flying in an aerobatic contest, they will perform this maneuver. And the Lufbery turn was a devastating thing that was done in combat, and he was a fantastic flyer. So Lufbery also had imagination in other ways. He was a great flyer, so he invented this drink. And what was the drink? And by the way, Lufbery, if you're curious, Lufbery had a very ironical death that didn't have anything to do with the enemy. But Lufbery was the leading ace on the front at that time, and he invented this drink. And why he invented it was interesting, that the drink is composed of champagne and cognac. Yes, champagne and cognac. So what you do is take a jigger of cognac, a good cognac, and you put this into a tall glass. It's a regular, like almost like what you would a Tom Collins glass, say, for example. And you put a jigger of this cognac in it, and then you fill the glass up with good, dry French champagne. And then you take a swizzle stick, and, of course, you swizzle it up, and it all bubbles and everything, and you put ice in it. It's usually served with ice, and quite often it can be served with a twist of lemon in it, too. They may add that to it. But that is a French 75. Now, why it was invented was because Lufbery, who was an American, by the way, you know, the Americans like hard liquor, generally, whereas the Europeans like wine. And so here he was an American with a name like Raoul Lufbery. It sounds kind of strange, but he was. He was from Connecticut, I believe. And so, yes, he was. And so Lufbery, when he'd come back, they would have this wine. They've had champagne. They toast each other in champagne. And so he says, you know, this stuff is, you know, it's kind of nice, but it's for kids. And so he was trying to figure out a way you could give the champagne a little more pizzazz. Well, cognac, you see, is a perfect mix with champagne because cognac is a spill-off or a spin-off of the process of making champagne. And so he mixed it with cognac, and instantly he entered into bartender history, the creation of this drink. First of all, everybody who drank it thought it was a groovy-tasting drink. You see, right away, they liked this drink. It tasted good. Well, the first day that they tried this thing, so he's drinking this drink, and so somebody says, well, why are you drinking Lufbery? And he said, well, I don't know. He says, I have makes this drink. And so, you know, he spoke fluent French. I have makes this drink. And with that, the French, this flying French companion says, what is it? It looks like it's champagne. He says, no, it's not champagne. N'est-ce c'est pas? Yeah, s'il vous plaît. It's champagne with another goodie. Was that? He says, would you like me to make one for you? And, of course, here they are. They're singing something like, Well, you know, it's World War One, very romantic war. And they're standing in the officer's mess, and every once in a while you could hear a Newport 28 or an SE-5 or a SPAD 13 roll over. Blah, 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 blah. You know, another guy going out to the Western Front to do battle with the dreaded checker-nosed Fokkers of the Red Baron. And so he says, would you like to try one of this drink? And the Frenchman, whose name was René, this has all been recorded in history, he says, but of course. And so he mixes them up, one of these babies, see? He says, I will over here, do not watch. I wish to surprise you. So he turns his back to René, and he mixes them up this drink, which at that point has no name, you see. It's just a drink. He just invented that afternoon. So he says, voila, here is a drink. And so René takes it, and he says, well, to our fallen companions, to Les Amiens, to the friends who have fallen over the lines today. Prosit. With that, Raoul Lufbery says, school. And so he takes the first shot at this historic moment. He drains it up. You know, those guys were real men in those days. Oh, yeah. They didn't sit around at, you know, like little places down at Greenwich Avenue and talk over oolong tea all afternoon and wear pink shirts. These were men, man. So he just takes this drinker, down the hatch it went. There was a brief moment. Let us put it this way. A pregnant pause. A certain condition. And suddenly, Renee, whose eyes turned suddenly to the ceiling, without any control, he begins to topple over backwards. And he says, oh, compagnons, quickly, duck to the floor. We have been hit by the Front 75. Quickly, quickly, they are shelling us. Well, he fell to the floor under the impression that he had been struck by a shell from a French 75, which, for those of you who do not know the history of World War One armament, the French 75 was the most famous artillery weapon to come out of that conflict. It was a famous weapon, and it was known for its fantastic kick. The French 75, to begin with, when they would fire this little son of a gun, it was only a 75-millimeter gun. When they fired it, whack, it would go. And it would roll backwards about 50 feet every time they fired it, just from the kick, yeah. And then, when the shell hit, it didn't give a warning like other shells. You know, those big old 105s and so forth, they would go boop, whoosh, whoosh, you know, not the French 75. They'll go whap, whap, and that's it. You are gone. And so, Rene topples over backwards, and he says, Oh, zounds, we are being struck by the 75. They have got us. And then that was the beginning of a great break. Oh, you come to the right place. This is historical. Do I hear the sound of footsteps approaching on quiet cat's feet? Yes. You like Rene? Did you like Rene? He says, zounds, well up. They are shelling us with the 75. Now, you think I'm kidding. The next time you go, and if you're of age, friend, the next time you go into a bar, say to the bartender, I will have the French 75, please. And you better have your insurance paid up. I don't know what there is in that stuff. Oh, yes, it's fantastic. And so you've come to the right place. This is the other side of the coin from Julia Child's. And, Oh, yeah, tomorrow night, I'm going to give you my own special personal recipe for slum gullion. And nothing like slum gullion. Make it with spam and dried the potatoes. Oh, it's just going to be fun, friends. So you drop in. Oh, yes, it's good. Oh, I'm not kidding. Oh, you want to hear more of Rene? You like him? He says, always saying, he's like, oh, but of course. It's the way Rene always talks. But of course. Incidentally, he survived World War One and is now a very, very well-off Peugeot dealer living near Marseille. He is still drinking French 75s and is now busily taking the cure. Oh, but of course, is the way he would put it. He is, you know, responsible for defeating 21 of the Bosch. Yeah, including... Silly program. Why did you waste your time? For crying out loud, you could have been doing push-ups and knee bends. There you were sitting around listening to this jazz. And I was doing it. What about wasting time?
And that concludes Gene Shepherd for this morning from the syndicated series of 1969, as recorded by some guy in Boston a week or two after it was on in New York. The date I have is November 17th of 1969. Close enough for me. And that wraps up this morning's program. Next week, more Records at Random, Scratchy Record Review, and or The Name Game for the first portion of the show, and we'll hear more from Henry Morgan and Gene Shepherd on next week's show. We're going to go out with a tiny bit of music. Ordinarily, Shepherd's show would end with the Palisades Park ad. Well, here's a song quite similar from my ancient childhood collection.